Paranormal Para X. The views expressed and the opinions given by the individual host and their guests do not necessarily reflect those of Para X, its affiliates, or its sponsors.
To you live and direct from my subterranean lair inside the third dimension of planet Earth. My name is Ra, and I'm here to awaken the dormant particles that are spiraling inside your DNA. So come with me as we go further down the mystical spiral of life. It's Spiral Radio, baby, where each and every week we unveil the different shades of you and the different shades of me. Until we all vibrate the same frequency. Guys, it's a great night tonight. We got the one and only Peter Moon with us. And we're going to get right into it. Peter Moon, you can find at thetimetraveleducationcenter.com. And you can find his books there at Sky Books. And Peter is the one and only Peter Moon. He really needs no introduction. He's known for his investigation in space-time projects. He's most known for the Montauk Project and his research and experiences in the Romanian Bucegi Mountains and the Romanian Sphinx. But that is just scratching the surface, ladies and gentlemen. He is an expert on the occult and various subjects. He spent years in Scientology and working closely with L. Ron Hubbard. There's so many interesting things about Peter. And I want to welcome Peter to Spiral Radio again. How's it going, buddy?
Well, thank you for the nice complimentary introduction. I hope that I can live up to it. And it's nice to be here.
Yeah, no, it's great. And I'm really, it's an honor to have you here. And that's why I had you have back on again, because really, you know, if you want, you know, every couple of months or every time you got something to talk about, I would love to have you back, because really an hour here and there just doesn't do you justice. Because like you could just barely scratch the surface with these things. And you know, recently I've been reading the Montauk Book of the Living book that you wrote, and I'm reading chapter over and over again, because like I was saying just prior to us going live, you know, each chapter in that book is a book in itself. I mean, it's really amazing. If no one's read your books out there, I highly recommend everybody pick up his books now. It's amazing.
Well, thank you. Where would you like to begin?
Yeah, so, you know, and yeah, because an hour, like I always say, an hour is going to fly by so fast that, you know, like the thing I think I really respect and enjoy about your work most is the fact that when you get into a topic, it becomes like a spiritual experience for you, like a mystical journey, a pilgrimage in itself, you know. And, you know, now that you've had some, like, such an interesting, you know, career, and you're most known for like the Montauk Project, and you're most known for, you know, Bucegi Mountains and the Romanian Sphinx and all that. But I think, you know, you have such an interesting pilgrimage like your soul's journey throughout your life. And most interviews and hosts, they don't even scratch the surface of who you really are. And I think that you being a student and knowledge of all the occult and metaphysical topics you have, that I'm really intrigued and compelled, you know, to go deep into the works of many occult figures that you've researched and talked about in your books, like Aleister Crowley, Jack Parsons, L. Ron Hubbard, even, you know, Marjorie Cameron and you know, all that whole Babylon workings and everything that went on with that. So if you don't mind, I have a few things I would like to talk about with that, if that's cool with you.
That's fine. And if you want to do this on a regular basis, you know, and your enthusiasm really makes a good for a good interview, not only for the audience, but for me. So we'll try and keep it at that level and, you know, begin where you want. I'm ready.
Cool. Yeah. See, that's my goal as well, because I really feel that these, you know, when people hear these topics, it's really going to resonate with them. And it's something that really intrigues me. And I've been immersed in it for many years. And it's an honor to be discussing this with people.
Let's get going.
Yeah. So, you know, when you first started researching, like, the Book of Law with Aleister Crowley, and you started having many synchronicities and karmic.
Is the better way to say it. But go ahead. Yes.
Yeah. I hate that word. I don't know why I always get stuck on it. Yeah. And
go ahead.
Synchronicities, right? Synchronicity.
Synchronicity.
Yeah. Synchronicity. Okay. Yes. Yeah. So you had many synchronicities and karmic events that took place while you started unlocking the mysteries of that book. And one being the car accident that you had. And
that's right.
But before, you know, we get into all that about the car accident, I wanted to ask you a little bit about the end of the Book of Law, the mysterious passage that, you know, that they say to paste the handwritten pages of it on a wall. And it's supposed to in a certain distinct manner. And then you begin with verse 73 or something like that. And then you waited for you to go. Your wife had left. You had some alone time. It happened to be in the dog days of August, when Sirius is closest to the Earth, the birth of Isis, all that. I'd like to hear a little bit about that and how you.
All right. Well, I'll first begin by discussing what the Book of the Law is. The Book of the Law is a book that is a rather, I guess, obsessive relic in the realm of the occult, and it was received, transmitted by Aleister Crowley after having sex in the Great Pyramid in the King's Chamber with his wife, Rose Kelly. And Rose Kelly is a very overlooked figure in all of this.
Yeah.
Because she would ostensibly be related to Edward Talbot Kelly, the man who helped John Dee channel the Enochian language, which was the foundation of the British Empire. But
he thought he was a reincarnation of John Dee itself, didn't he? He felt that?
I don't know. I'm, you know, he thought a lot of things, and I don't remember that. I know he thought he was Alpheus Levi, but whatever. I have to get, you know, in other words, Crowley was a sort of transmitter. He was a transceiver, to put it in electronics terms. And just because I'm talking about Crowley does not mean I'm a Crowleyite or a
– Yeah, me either. Exactly, yeah.
I'm just stating my position. But this Book of the Law that he transmitted after having sex in the Great Pyramid, it was Rose Kelly who directed him to the Bullock Museum and told him to go there. And he went to exhibit 666 and found the stele of Mentu. And of course, this phonetics, as pointed out to me by Aleister Crowley's son, was who I had a correspondence with, which is a whole other story, was related to Montauk phonetically. And he was pointing out the synchronicity of this. Now, to go back, the Book of the Law is this document that was written in a code. Now, so anyway, this was a intelligence that went through Aleister Crowley. It was not Aleister Crowley himself. Yeah. And this is not always well understood, because Crowley was an open channel. Preston Nichols is very similar. He's an open channel. There's a lot of things that come through him. And I will tell you that there is a very similar characteristic between Aleister Crowley and L. Ron Hubbard. And yeah. I've only been able to determine, well, from Hubbard, yes, it's from knowing him. And I actually mentioned this to somebody who was very close to him, was with him all the times. He says, oh, exactly what you said. He couldn't believe how much I nailed it. If you look into Hubbard, he would mirror, it was like a mirror effect.
Wow.
If you put fear out at him, you get fear back. If you put out love, you get love back. He'd see, you know, that he was a mirror man. And Crowley was the same way. So if you went up to Crowley and you had some sort of imperfection in your aura or weakness or vulnerability, you get slammed back with a rubber band. If you were strong, you're going to get something else. And so the average human being is not all that strong. So on any level, and it's not to say that there aren't strong people in the world, but the average human being is just not all that strong, and they're vulnerable. So anyway, so Crowley ends up wreaking havoc on a lot of people for that very reason. This is not putting a judgment on anyone. It's just saying this is the facts of the matter. Now, this Book of the Law only became of interest to me when I read a book in 1987. I read it. I think it was just right after it had come out in the Forbidden Planet bookstore in Manhattan, where I happened to be. And I said, oh, this book, L. Ron Hubbard, Madman or Messiah, by Bent Corydon and L. Ron Hubbard Jr., the latter being his son. Bent Corydon, I knew who he was. I don't think I ever met him or even saw him, but he was a very popular mission holder in the Riverside Mission of Scientology, which meant he was an individual entrepreneur who would sell or administer the lower levels of Scientology in Riverside to the general public. And he was very successful. He was very, public oriented. And he had his own issues with the church, with L. Ron Hubbard. I won't go into those, but he ended up being very disaffected and writing a book, and he had obtained information.
Writing the book slandering him?
Well, first off, people don't understand what slander is. Slander is verbal. If it's written, it's libel.
You're right.
I don't think there's anything in that book that is necessarily libelous by the definition of libel. He certainly was never accused of libel, I don't think. And the book was held up, and there was all sorts of court orders, but, I mean, it went out. So I don't think there's anything libelous. And keep in mind, when somebody says something negative about a person, it can be their opinion. And so it's like if you're saying untrue things about him, or you can give somebody's testimony that this happened to them, and if, you know, so and when it's a dead person, you can't, it's hard to libel a dead person. I don't think you can.
Yeah.
So anyway, this came out after Hubbard's death. So these things aren't really an issue, but what was of interest to me, and I had known very well of Hubbard's association with Jack Parsons, and that he was, Parsons was connected to Crowley magic, but I didn't really know of Hubbard's fascination, if not obsession, with Aleister Crowley. And so because I had been so wound around Hubbard in my own experiences in Scientology, and you couldn't get into Scientology and not be wound around some aspect of L. Ron Hubbard, except that my experiences were very close because I worked in his personal office. I wrote letters for him in his name. And you could say that to a certain degree, not 100%, but I was not only the horse's mouth, I was trained to be the horse's mouth. And I had a lot of viewpoints that the ordinary Scientologist or Sea Org member didn't have. And I once saw some personal letters that he wrote to one of his messengers, and she stated very clearly these were not letters from the letter writing department, and they weren't. I could tell that, but I said, wow, those are letters I could have written, except that he wrote them, he embellished them more. And I don't mean embellished them in a negative way. He put more, you know, TLC into them than I would have, more love and care into the effusiveness he expressed towards this particular person. So I could see, you know, I was trained in his style and did it, you know, for better or for worse. But in any case, so I really got a lot to understand how he thought, and I didn't know every aspect of the man. Was a very mysterious man. And but in any case, when I saw that his involvement with Aleister Crowley, by reason of reading this book, was so much more in depth than I had known, many people have a reaction and say, "Oh, well, you know, he's working for the devil. He's this. Oh, it's all, we were all conned." And I did not have that reaction at all, because everything I had learned in Scientology, I had taken with me, and it was a great experience for me. When I look back, I didn't walk away with any bitterness, with any unresolved issues. I did not have unresolved issues. There were unresolved issues with the church, with Hubbard, with all of his legacy. These are tremendously unresolved issues, although they were not my issues. So I was, however, fascinated with, so I began to read about Aleister Crowley, but more specifically, I purchased this book, and I purchased other books. I read his autobiography, which he calls an hagiography, which means the autobiography of a saint. He considered himself a saint. And anyway, I read many, you know, many passages in that, which gives you a completely different viewpoint. If you don't read that book, you really can't understand Aleister Crowley. And that's, even reading that doesn't give you the whole picture. There is so much in any religion, there's so much gamesmanship involved. And of course, Crowley was a very religious figure. That doesn't mean he's good or he's bad, but he grew up studying the gospel. He knew the gospel, the New Testament, backwards and forwards. And he had a very, you know, not only a broad education in normal terms, he had a broad education in the occult, and he was had a good you know, skill in it. But anyway, to get back to the Book of the Law, his magical practices led him to transmit this book, and this book became the major preoccupation of his life. And to his dying day, he said he never understood it. He would write books about it. He would have insights about it. And of course, read the book, and it had, you know, it's written largely in code, and I didn't really understand it. Yeah. But you kind of read it and you kind of get some information. Of course, it repels people like rapid fire, because it will say, "Do what thou wilt shall be the whole of the law."
Yep.
And this scares the living daylights out of people. And it's very interesting, because if you read the book, he says, you better make sure that this is your will. This doesn't mean go eat a hot fudge sundae anytime you want. This doesn't mean, you know, take your child's savings account for, you know, for college and go spend it on a weekend in Las Vegas. It doesn't tell you this. People will look at it and say, "Well, it means you do whatever you want." And no, it doesn't mean that. And I'm not an advocate in any way, shape, or form for Crowley or even the book. I'm just telling you what it says.
I've read it.
It's like saying, "So what? Who are you? And what are you doing? Look at yourself. who are you and what is your orbit? Get on your orbit. And this is a very Taoist sort of reference, like, you know, be, and this whole idea of the self is something that Scientologists who are now ex-Scientologists and are very bitter, they weren't responsible for their selves and their reactions. They're going along with sort of the group idea or this or that. They're following what other people say or think. And in their, and this is one of the great tragedies of humanity, not just ex-Scientologists or potentially Scientologists, is that people have too much reverence for what other people think. And, you know, this does not mean that you go to the opera barefoot. I don't mean to say this. But you know, people care too much about what other people think. And to tell you the truth, if you do all the things you're supposed to and fit all of those moral codes, that you wear the right clothes, you do this and do this, they still might hate you for it because you look better than they do. So it's like, so why do you even bother? You see, so anyway, it's not so important what other people think. And many people base their whole careers on what do they think? What does this? So anyway, Crowley was the exact opposite, and Hubbard was no different. He didn't really care what, you know, the so-called authorities thought about him. But back to the Book of the Law. The Book of the Law was a very revered piece of literature in magical circles, and it was supposed to be this great, you know, mystery that was literally, that is literally used in rituals of Crowley's magical order, the OTO or Ordo Templi Orientis, where they will do their Gnostic Mass with the Book of the Law. But what I did to get back to what you were saying is, it gives instructions in the book to take these pages and put them up in a certain, you know, paste them up. And I actually, back in the days of copy machines, I had a huge copy machine, you know, for our agency that we used. And I made all these copies. It was quite a few copies of the handwritten aspects of it. And I, as I say, my wife was on vacation with my in-laws and with my daughter. And I sit there and I just put them up on the bedroom wall. And it was, and stuff began to happen. And I remember talking to one member of the OTO because I had certain friendly associations with the OTO. I was never a member of it. But when I wrote the book, The Montauk Revisited, which mentioned all this, I'd start getting letters from OTO dignitaries because they saw that I was, you know, walking the path of magic, not being a part of them. But I go in that book how I met the head of the OTO through synchronicity, and he helped me meet Marjorie Cameron. So I was, and my interest in this was, I was working the trail, walking in the trail of L. Ron Hubbard in his magical vestige.
What kind of aura did she have about her? What kind of, was she like just captivating?
Well, she was in her older years and
still.
She was very, I guess what you call matter of fact.
Wow.
I think taciturn, you know, saturnian. But she's very matter of fact, sort of has a cold exterior. But I mean, she, you know, I saw her exhibit warmth. I mean, she was a very gracious host in her, I guess what she called her, you know, she had an apartment sort of slash house in West Hollywood. It was,
but she could be soulless, huh?
Well, I wouldn't call her that. I wouldn't give any negative attributes to her just because I wouldn't. I knew her as a friend. So, but yeah. I'm saying it's like her personality wasn't like, you know, she reaches out and, you know, and hugs you like some, overzealous person. No, she was polite. She was nice. We had business to discuss. So we were more like talking like two people that were comparing notes. And that, you know, so there was a certain, almost a professional respect, but it was of two people who've walked the path and know the path and are talking about the path. So,
I look at her as this mystical figure because I grew up in a little younger generation. So I have a completely different view as her.
But when you meet a mystical figure in the flesh, they're a human being.
You know,
I mean, Hubbard had a much more grandiose persona than she did because he had all these, you know, acolytes and, you know, a whole ship dedicated to nothing but he wanted to do. You know, he was a manifestation of the will, without will. But in any case, her means and everything was much more modest. But getting back to the Book of the Law, as I say, I was walking this path. So in other words, I'm saying is when I met her, I was able to meet the head of the OTO who was at the book fair in 1992 in Anaheim. It was then called the American ABA, American Booksellers Association Conference Expo. And he was not only there, but there were all these OTO people I was hanging out with. And I was hanging out with them, not so much, you know, palling around with them, but I was there waiting to meet him. So, and there was one of the members I struck up quite a friendship with because she had been in Scientology too, and she had held a similar position. So we actually were very friendly and we understood each other. And so we had a lot of dialogues. She was also a friend of Cameron's. But in any case, I remember when I did this, pasted these sheets, one member of the OTO that I told, she laughed and says, nobody does this. Nobody does this. But she was complimenting me.
You saw it like an experiment. You were just, you know, doing a, yeah, I hear you.
Well, I put things to use. I do things.
Yeah.
And I'm not sitting there, you know, with my thumb up my rear just saying, okay, I said, well, this is what he says to do. Let's do it. Let's see what happens. And what happened was, there were some very intense dreams, and I wrote about the dreams in the book. There was a lot of synchronicity tied to those dreams, and it was on the August 12th. I remember getting a phone call out of the blue from this woman at I think she lived in Amagansett, but her husband worked, which is just the first town next to Montauk. Her husband worked at the base, and he had been worked over very harshly, and he had all this, like, you know, Montauk type programming. And she was calling me, and she was reading that part of the book, and she says, you need to, you know, look up the coordinates, take that line and look up the coordinates. So she was telling me to look at certain parts of the planet from that book. She was giving me a direct communication with regards to latitude and longitude. I don't know that I was really satisfied that they gave me the answers I was looking for, but I eventually did get the answers I was looking for and this was from a man in who had been in the OTO and kicked out or escaped barely with his life, and I say because of all the circumstances that befell him as a result of his associations with all this magical energy. He basically had cracked the code, and the code is explained in that book, the Montauk Book of the Living, and it shows that it explains very clearly the relationship of how the Kabbalah, the Tree of Life diagram, in the Kabbalah is basically representative of DNA.
Yeah.
And it goes into the matrix and the spiral. And See, the DNA was not known about back when Crowley channeled that book. So this spirit was talking about DNA, teaching about DNA. And it was coming, it's no coincidence that it came through the King's Chamber of the Great Pyramid. You see,
yeah.
This was, it was actually life talking. It was life talking. And this is what's important. Now, I will expand upon this in future books, but this man's name, John Paroli, he's gone through a lot of personal hell. He has a genius side to him. He's been, deeply, knew a lot of secrets, figured out a lot of stuff that was going on. And he was like a real understander. And of course, they didn't like that, which is, they looked at him as a threat from everything he's told me. So he shared this with me. I wouldn't mind doing more with him. He's had a lot of health issues.
We're going to take a break real quick, Peter. I don't mean to cut you off, but we're going to go on our one break, and we'll be back for another 30 minutes after the break. But we'll pick up right where we left off. You got it, Pete? Peter, you there?
I'm here. How long is the break?
All right, cool. Yep. So, everybody, the song coming up is Realms by Analog Driver. Spiral Out.
Oh,
work, or anywhere. Thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
And we are back with the one and only, the magnanimous Peter Moon. And it's a waning crescent Scorpio moon out there. And I'm coming to you live from my subterranean lair. And once again, you can find our great guest, Peter Moon, at timetraveleducationcenter.com. And you can find me, Ra Castaldo, at themysticalspiral.com. And my YouTube channel, my new video blog, is Exploring the Ka with your host, Ra Castaldo. Check me out there as well. So we'll get right back into our guest, Peter. And we were discussing the little experiment you did on the wall.
Right. Yes. Know. Yes. The book of the law. And I can pick up where we left off. I just want to say, anybody interested in the books, all my books are on Kindle, iTunes, or Nook. And also skybooksusa.com is the website for getting the books. Anyway. Yeah.
And with Rose, I had a question too before. With Rose Kelly, you know, she was like a, became like a trans medium, or like a medium for a little while in during that time where they were in the Great Pyramid and all that. And she said like that he had offended Horus or something, right?
Yes, but she was that wasn't her natural bent. So that's why it was all the more remarkable that it was through her, because this was more of his domain. So it's kind of like it, you know, the guy that works at Burger King all of a sudden starts channeling, you know, it's like, what wall does this come off of? You know, he just flips burgers. So it's more in that context. It was off the wall. So in any case, back to, there was a lot of magical significance that Crowley put on it, because in the writing it says, you know, that Crowley wouldn't understand it, but someone would come after him who would. And this was, you know, a big deal. So when it actually, but the guy who really cracked the code is not me, it's John Baroli. And I have exposed it. So this is like the fruition. Now Hubbard is attributed to having thought that he was the one who was the fulfillment of the Book of the Law, the one that would come after Crowley. Now,
what do you feel?
He did not understand this. Yeah. He didn't understand it. He didn't understand the book. But what he did have was the magical velocity that accompanied it. You see, this is what people don't understand. Hubbard has been called all sorts of negative things. Basically indicating that he's just a hack con man, and that he's no different than any others. No, he's far more different, far more different. And it has a lot to do with his genetics. But in other words, there was a hurricane force. He even says to his son, according to his son, Nibs, or L. Ron Hubbard Jr., he quotes his father as saying, telling him that he's just a fart in a hurricane. And well, in certainly he L. Ron Hubbard Jr. lived up to the billing that his father gave him there. But so did his father. His father was a hurricane. And a hurricane is a violent force that's calm in the middle, but it's a violent force. So what I'm saying is,
that's poetic.
Well, it's true. But so in other words, when you get into the magical current, and there is one book by James Wasserman who was very much involved in the OTO. It's called, I think, in the Center of the Fire. And he had all this fire around him. I mean, you know, and of course, there's a lot of hellfire associated with all of this, literally hellfire. And, you know, Hubbard talks about the wall of fire. And maybe he talks about that in a different context. I've never really thought about it, but there's hellfire surrounding all of this stuff. And what happens is So when Hubbard moves into and begins to apply his psychological techniques, some of which are, what do you call it, developed from Aleister Crowley's work, some of which are developed from pure psychoanalysis, he has a, I guess what you call captive mesmeric effect on the population, who buy into the idea that they can unlock the pieces of their mind that are holding them back. And certainly you can unlock the pieces of your mind, but this has a lot to do with you. And the techniques that you are given are only like tools. Some people are good with tools. They can make incredible things. Some people might hurt themselves. The greater degree of the danger of the tools, the greater degree of hurt that may occur. And certainly the greater the degree of lack of expertise is, the more someone might get hurt. But in any case, Hubbard was very much a active player in the current of magic that Crowley had, you know, worked with. And of course, Jack Parsons was also somebody who was working in his effort to complete the Book of the Law. So he was actually doing the Babylon working, which I know you asked about and were interesting. This was
that's what I wanted to talk about as well. Fulfill
the Book of the Law. And the Babylon working was much around associated with the creation of a moon child. And of course, this is a something that's been very misunderstood as well.
Yeah.
This is, but the problem with it is, it's not a black and white operation. Everybody would like to say it's black and white. Well,
yeah.
Jack was a magician, and he created, like, his whole thing was to create this moon child to reverse the negative patriarchy and incarnate Babylon, the mother goddess.
The goddess, yeah.
And so, see, this gets, it's like, how effective was he? How effective is anybody or anything? You take Obama. He goes into office. He wants to do certain things, any president, not just Obama. And they usually find that they can't do any measure of what they wanted to do because they find out that the office is so different than they had thought or than anybody told them. So, in other words, was he successful? You know, and I'm not here to evaluate politics, but just in his own mind, by his own statement, he was successful at some things. He wasn't successful at other things. And this is going to apply to any president. But the point of it is, I'm talking about Jack Parsons now. How successful was he? Well, you know, his work isn't even done yet. So
yeah, that's what I'm saying. It's still being continued. I was going to say that. So basically for our audience, I mean, people that don't really understand, is too Marjorie Cameron basically was summoned as an elemental, right? She was evoked as the elemental and to, you know, to carry the moon child basically, like as a vessel. So they said, like, at that point maybe she was like even soulless, right?
I don't think she was ever soulless. That's what I meant
by it before. You know, when they said that, because that's what I've read in one of the I
met the woman. She had a soul. She was a lovely, you know, person. But she,
But at one time, was there like a soul transfer, like, you know, from the astral, you know, her soul was out of body, and for a short time she was a vessel.
Well, the bottom line with her, as she told me, she says, I became Babylon. She says, I became Babylon.
Wow.
And
she
says, my hair started to go from reddish to white. I started to carry a walking staff and began to look like Gandalf. She began to have a face. But, you know.
Whoa. She actually said that to you, too? Wow. Yes, that's powerful, man.
Became the crone. But the thing is that she said, I'm not the only Babylon. There's all there's many versions of Babylon, but she says
she'd be the three stages of the goddess. That's the three stages of the goddess too. You go from the, you know, the maid. Yeah. Oh my God.
Yes. But the thing is that she was also meant to carry the moon child.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like it all gets kind of mixed up. You know, you're the third baseman, the shortstop, and you're the manager of the team. It all gets kind of confused, but you're all there trying to win the World Series. And, you know, this is kind of it's not a cut and dry operation because there's all these different currents. And then you have Hubbard, who is a very interesting character and not well understood in the reference frame of the magic that he participated in with these two. It will be sensationalized and say that he ejaculated onto a parchment or some stuff by people that really don't have any, idea of what this operation was in terms of the inner reference frame with which these people worked. But
I mean, that whole scene too, I read in the book, you know, Marjorie Cameron, I think it was the Wormwood Star or whatever. And I read some other books about her too. And that whole scene I've thought about and had visions about for many years of her just arriving at Jack Parsons' door, like showing up in like a cigar shaped craft and arriving at his door, like all disoriented, like she didn't know where she came from. And then
she'd been in a car accident.
She had been in a car accident. Yeah, so see, accident. There's two different stories.
You go to the door of the person. Hey, I need help.
Had sex for like 2 weeks, right? They were up in his bed when they first for like 2 weeks.
I don't remember what exactly happened when, you know, she arrived at the door in a magical reference frame. But what's important here is that Hubbard, in these experiments, and there's many currents working because there is a case to be made that he was sent in to that operation by Aleister Crowley. Working as an agent, not only for Nate, he always said he was working for naval intelligence, and he was living with Heinlein, who worked in naval intelligence, and was introduced to Jack by Heinlein, but also was quite, according to one stream of information, was sent in by Aleister Crowley to break up the Babylon working. Not necessarily by naval intelligence per se, but and to mess with it. But whether that's true or not, we don't really know. But whether he got involved in the rituals and he took on the rituals, whether he was participating willingly or Jack chose him as a familiar because he didn't have a black cat or whatever else would have been used as a familiar as typical. So he writes to Crowley that I chose Ron as his familiar. What this means is that on some level of magical sympathy, it doesn't necessarily describe the whole totality of L. Ron Hubbard, but it describes a part of the current that moved through him was working as a familiar for Jack Parsons. In other words, Hubbard was there to fulfill the destiny of the Babylon working. And he and was in that current working through him. And in my life, I have been a receiver of that current because I was able to meet with Marjorie through all of this magical current. So in other words, and it all fit in with my experiences with L. Ron Hubbard. Here I'm meeting two of the people who participated in the Babylon working, actually two. There's a magical witnessing effect that goes with that. I did not meet Jack, but I certainly, you know, had Jack in my head for a period of time, like, you know, wanting to get some of his work out. So in any case, what all of this means is that it enabled me, all of this current enabled me to understand the Book of the Law in a way that has not been understood previously, and to expound upon it and show how it refers to the DNA. And John Paroli will tell you that the Book of the Law is really a hidden sort of basically expressing the Tao Te Ching, the Book of the Tao. And I can relate to this as far as the pyramid goes, as far as the Great Pyramid goes, and some of the secrets I've been learning with the art of Taoist Qigong. I'm not inclined to disagree with him, because this is the life spiral and learning the secrets of the pyramid. And when I say the secrets of the pyramid, I'm not talking about going and digging up, you know, sand bars. I'm talking about the actual energetics of the pyramid.
Frequencies,
And not even frequencies, the energetics. I mean, because frequencies just sounds like, you know, you're beaming out. People write these books about
You mean the energy, the vibration, the frequency, all of it together,
Where you know somebody understands the pyramid, they can use it in their physical body to create physical effects that would befuddle the average mind. And you can see it, there's videos on Qigong videos, but I have to warn people about Qigong videos. There's a certain martial artist that will fake these things. They'll be faking it, but some of them are not fake, and you have to use your own judgment. Where they're faking, you know, knocking over a bunch of students. I've seen people get knocked over in math by my teacher.
Wow,
it's not fake, but I've seen where people are obviously faking it. So you have to use your discernment. In any case. Not every Qigong video is a legitimate one. But anyway, all of this stuff is what I've learned as a result of having all of these experiences. So the Book of the Law is, and I don't mean to suggest that every bit of it has been decoded, but the thrust of it certainly puts a different light. And a lot of what I'm, like, just as I've done with the department the subject of physics as it relates to time travel, it's like it shows you that physicists, and this is all exposed at timetraveleducationcenter.com, it's like these physicists didn't quite have it right with regards to time. They didn't know it, although all the information is in physics. There are physicists who did understand it. John Archibald Wheeler, co-author of the Everett Wheeler hypothesis. He understood these things. There are other physicists who did, but by and large, the most popular ones, they don't get it. So it's the same way in the magical area. There's a lot of people that have all this magical titles and stuff, and they kind of miss the forest from the trees because they're too busy, harvesting the fruit of the forest, which has been misappropriated. Next comment, your turn.
Yeah, no. So do you think that there was a, because even Jack Parsons had wrote down that there was like a cigar-shaped craft outside the house that night that she arrived. Do you think that she was just disoriented because it was the car crash?
Well, she had an accident. She had an accident, and that's how she appeared. Now, there may well have been a UFO, whatever the cigar shape was, being present. That may well have happened. But I wouldn't suggest that she came down from it, because she had a very normal life in terms of being a physical body. She had an accident. I can't really comment on the cigar-shaped craft, because I really don't know what happened. But sure, phenomena. I mean, she told me that in 1952, when the crafts buzzed the White House, and that's been in print, that was right at the time of his death. You know, she noticed that. The U.S. Capitol got buzzed by some sort of flying phenomena.
Yeah, that's great. So you see, that's really like how I like you too, because when you get like into a topic, you like the Hindus say, like you open your mind, you evoke the Brahma. Like, that's exactly how you approach, you like open your mind about a topic. You really get into it. And that's why I love, you know, having you on, and we're going to have you on other times as well. It's like, can you basically, when you, you know, harness energy and you focus and make it into like a creativity, you know, it's really a powerful thing. And I think you do that in your writing.
I tried to talk about that and give, because people ask me about that a lot. How do you write the way you write? And I wrote a book called The White Bat, The Alchemy of Writing.
That's your new one, right?
It's the most recent book. I'm working on about at least three others right now. And I'm working on three others, and they're in my website. It's a subscriber website on timetraveleducationcenter.com. The three books I'm working on right now is one is called L. Ron Hubbard, The Tao of Insanity, which discusses some of the hurricane power I'm talking about here. It's got about six chapters so far. I've got a book called Stardust, an initiation, I think it's called An Initiation into Time. That's got about five or six chapters. That's going into the qualitative aspects of time. And the other book is called Qigong, The Gateway to Infinity. I've got chapters up on that. So I'm actually writing it, encouraging people that read it as I write it to give me feedback, you know, so as to improve the book as I write it, so people can read it as I write. Why I'm doing it
that would be cool,
this
yeah.
way is, you know, they all the books kind of feed each other. And it's hard writing three books at once because I'm also doing video production. And the reason I'm doing it is I'm becoming more transmedia, and I put this website together, timetraveleducationcenter.com, and it's a new, as they say, it's transmedia. It's a different way of publishing what I've written, as opposed to the conventional book business, which I've participated in. This is the 25th anniversary of Sky Books, the Montauk Project Silver Anniversary. If I have time, I'll put together a Silver Anniversary edition, which will include updates. I don't know if I'll have the time to do it. There's a lot of exciting things happening right now, a lot of exciting things, including I'm scheduled to be interviewed for the History Channel. They're going to do a two-hour special on Montauk. They'd like to do a whole series on it. So we'll see if
That's
all
cool.
things happen according to that. And I plan to offer them some surprises, too, if things go according to you know, their plan and my plan.
Nice. You got some, you know, some tricks up your sleeve, some secrets and stuff to drop bombs. Yeah, I paused before because you know, I was going to bring it up, but I realized we didn't have enough time. Like, because I'm like kind of intimately related with these Babylon workings in a way. I've had some astral experiences in my life that, maybe we'll talk about it on another show or another time. I just didn't want to start getting into like stories about me. I wanted to talk about you, so I didn't bring it up, and we were running out of time. But listen, everybody, we're all out of time, and I want to thank Peter for joining us again. And if you're just joining us, you missed an amazing show and some amazing recollections of Peter's life and different encounters and experiences he's had and books that he's written. We were with the wonderful and amazing Peter Moon, and he's at timetraveleducationcenter.com, and I am at themysticalspiral.com, and you can find me on Twitter at @ra_muay. I want to thank everybody for another beautiful week. Thank you for joining us in the chat room. You guys are wonderful and beautiful. And have a great, amazing, safe night. And like always, I say, spiral out. You. Yeah.